The business of scientific inquiries, our theme for today. I've got Laura Green, eminent scientist there at the Mag Lab. Don't want to miss that. Dr. David Gusak, who is an art therapy educator. He's professor of art therapy, head of the Department of Art Education there at Florida State. Stay with me, folks. We got a great show lined up for you.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
Truck and Car Concepts, we're your one-stop shop for tricking out your truck. Truck and Car Concepts, people with their cars, we're number one by far. Caps, toys to throw your money at, car stereos, car alarms, things for all you soccer moms, detail and diamond play, parts to fix your tailgate. Truck and Car Concepts, we're your one-stop shop for tricking out your truck. Truck and Car Concepts, people with their cars, we're number one by far. Exterior accessories, gift kits for your mud needs, mud tires, nice wheels, everyone will get a deal. Window tinting, that's a must. Come on out and visit us. Truck and Car Concepts, we're your one-stop shop, we always aim to please. Truck and Car Concepts, everything is here from A to Z.
We find ourselves on this lovely Saturday in the month of June 2017 talking with people like Dave Gusak and Laura Green. If you're the kind of person looking for light conversation, you might as well go do something else, because this one is going to take you on a rather interesting journey, I think. At least I'm looking forward to the discussion. The conversations we'll have with Dr. David Gusak having to do with the business of art therapy, particularly his role as an educator, someone who has been spending a good deal of his time researching this business of how art therapy can be especially productive in relation to those individuals and even populations of individuals who are otherwise unaffected, we might say, by more customary or maybe more traditional methods of therapy, mental health therapy. So art therapy comes along and says, look, this is a means by which we can access, and most importantly, help this individual access aspects of their personality, or latent tendencies or repressed thought, particularly just finding emotional expression for whatever emotions are on tap. And oftentimes they are highly conflicted or conflictual. The business of unresolved emotional conflict. I mean, come on, that's pretty well established among us as a problem that is contributive to a lot of other malady. If you find somebody who has been abused as a child, if you find someone who has suffered massive or prolonged trauma, either by neglect or by action, so either a proactive form of trauma. In fact, therapists often talk about type A and type B trauma. You know, what happens to you versus what did not happen for you that amounts to a kind of neglect. Well, if you're subject to both of those, and most of us are to some degree, right? When it's severe enough that it leaves the person disabled, we might say, or suffering with unresolved issues beyond their own comprehension and beyond their ability to articulate. Well, Dr. Gusak is going to say art therapy can be especially effective. And so we're going to dig in with him a little bit as to his latest travels and activity and research and his writings. Very well published, by the way. Art on Trial, probably one of the most well-known, highly distributed. Art on Trial, Dr. David Gusak. Yeah, he has spent a lot of his time working with inmates, particularly. And he'll talk about that in today's conversation. In fact, as it turns out, we're going to do a two-part mini-series here with Dr. Gusak. So we'll have him for today's show, and then he'll be back with us again next week for part two. So you see there? This is kind of a BOGO thing. Right, Carl? It's like, you know, you listen today, and then you get to listen again next week at no additional charge. Sort of like that. Okay, so you want to do that, and then you want to make sure you stay through into the second hour because we have this lovely Laura Green, who, as a scientist, spends her time over there at the Mag Lab, National High Magnetics Laboratory, right? Doing very curious kinds of things, very intriguing work. She's going to talk with us about that process and how scientific discovery then happens for her in her realm and among those who with whom she is working, those colleagues here and around the world. By the way, if you haven't seen this, she's on the cover of a recent edition of Tallahassee Family Magazine. Uh-huh, Laura Green. She is the chief scientist, the eminent physicist at the Mag Lab. And quite a story there, courtesy of Kristen Coyne and the photographic talents of Dave Barfield. Aren't we blessed to have such people around us? Right, Carl? We are. Wow. Bringing these stories to bear on our world's welfare and right here in our own community to have such marvelous individuals who contribute so well and so I would have to say selflessly, if I may say that. I don't, you know, Laura Green is not somebody who, or David Gusak, are people who are grabbing for headlines. Heavens no. These people just seem to be tireless in their pursuit of their own interests, that is to say, their academic interests, their scientific pursuit. And we benefit in lots of ways. And we're going to find out what some of those ways may be when Laura Green joins us in the second hour. So there you go. And I've got Miriam Dady standing by. She's got another guest in the business spotlight coming up here in just about a couple of minutes. And I should take this opportunity to remind you all that we have for you all of our shows archived. TallahasseeTalks.com is the place to go. You can listen to a broadcast from prior episodes, editions of. You can also email us topics at TallahasseeTalks.com. Share with us an idea you have for a topic or a guest, someone that you would like us to talk with. You can refer them to us. Happy to do so. That's why we get a lot of the folks that come our way, because you have sent us an email suggesting an idea. We do read your emails. It's there. You can find us on Facebook, of course, and Twitter with all kinds of news of the day. We try to keep that fresh for you. So this is what we do. And I have to also give a little tip of the hat to our folks over there at the Tallahassee Family Magazine. That new edition is out, the latest. Franz Lee Moyce, who was on the show here a while back, is on the cover. You definitely want to get your hands on this. You can find the magazine at New Leaf Market It's at Whole Foods Market, and it's at Earth Fair, among three different locations. It's also at Leon County Library, any of the branches. You can pick them up there. Tallahassee Museum has it. Even the Gulf Specimen Marine Lab down there in Panacea. If you live in, you know, down there in Wakulla County or along the coast, that's a great place to stop. Pick up a copy of the magazine. We provide it to you as our gift. It's a courtesy by way of the good folks that make that magazine come together every time we do it. It's a quarterly publication. So you enjoy that, and be sure to stay with me as we bring to the mic here Miriam Dady with her guest in the Business Spotlight. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
I love my Volvo. That's why I love Volcar. They take care of my Volvo the way I do. But my husband doesn't drive a Volvo. Good news, Volcar cares for all cars, and they give the same extra attention to detail and the same qualified precision every car requires. New or not so new, Carol and her team at Volcar are some of my most favorite people. She makes it a lot easier to understand what's going on with my car. And I trust her. And I think my husband does too, especially when he saw they charge less than his mechanic for the same service. So we're just one big happy family. Me, my Volvo, and my husband. With a little help from our friends at Volcar.
Volcar Sales and Service on Capital Circle Northeast, just north of Miccosukee in Tallahassee. Volcar for all cars. On the web at volcartally.com or call 942-4980. 942-4980.
Changing the face of talk radio in Tallahassee. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Time now for today's Business Spotlight with Miriam Dady, brought to you by Tallahassee Community College Workforce Development.
Hello, my name is Miriam Dady, and this is Tallahassee Business Spotlight. If any of you are like me, and you've kind of gone over to the Mac side of world, and you have a little Apple insignia on all the electronics you own, you are going to want to listen up to my next guest. I have here Greg Kulavis. Greg, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Miriam. Appreciate
Greg
it.
Greg is the owner of Mac and More Systems, and he's over there by Esposito Garden Center on Capitol Circle, right kind of in the corner where Carrabba's is, right?
Correct. We're right next door to Esposito's in that shopping center with Carrabba's.
And you are a Mac guy.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell me about what got you into the Apple side of things as opposed to PCs.
It was taking a part-time job about 30 years ago, and I was doing a Mac lab at a Kinko's store, and that's what I got hired for, and that was my first introduction into Macs. It's going on about 30 years now.
Well, so. I have been using you guys for at least 15 years with my little Macs here and there and my iPhones, and you guys are miracle workers as far as I'm concerned.
Thank
Yesterday, you saved me, so I have nothing but good things to say about you. How do you reach your customers? Did they find you online or...
We do have an online presence. We have a website, macandmoresystems.com. We also reach out to customers with our Facebook and our Twitter.
Okay.
Twitter's just being picked up by us this year, so it's kind of in its infancy for us. The Facebook page we've been doing now for a couple years, and I've kind of had to hand that off to my kids because they're a little bit more in tune with that whole social media aspect.
They have the time to keep it going.
Correct. But a lot of ours is just referrals.
You guys are brick and mortar. I can walk in and look somebody in the eye and say, when I hit this button, command such and such, look at what happens, and you have somebody to help me. I really like that.
Appreciate that. Correct. That's one of our major features that we've always attained to try to continue doing. Not only just having that presence there, but within the store itself, we sell some of the niche devices that you may need for your Mac. I need to connect it to a projector, to a TV. We carry those type of harder to find peripheral devices. And as well, we've branded out over the last few years in doing what we call consignments. The difference between what we do and most everybody else is instead of me buying that system from you at about 30 cents on the dollar, we'll consign it, and then I'll do a 20% commission when we sell it. So you can get 80 cents on the dollar for that value of their system than getting 30 cents on the dollar.
So all the Mac owners that get tired and what they want the newest, coolest thing, they can come to you with their system. You'll help them clean it up, get it sold.
Correct.
And then they can be the newest kid on the block with the hottest airbook
newest
or whatever.
Stuff. Correct. Yes.
Fun.
Correct. Because that was one of the big issues that we were starting to see was you have this 27-inch iMac. How do you sell that? You want to do it on Craigslist and have somebody come over to your house that you've never met? You want to take that over to McDonald's and try to plug it in and see if it's going to work? So my wife and I decided let's do it in this facet. Rather than buying it from you, let's let the tide rise all boats. And so we decided to do it on the consignment side. Most all the units will come with a 30-day warranty through us, unless there's AppleCare still associated with them. We have several newer units that keep coming in, which will still have AppleCare. Then you have the AppleCare available on that unit. All the units are listed on our website, and that website is kept fresh and up to date as much as I can with drilling to the kids. You can see all the items that we're selling on the website.
What's the biggest issue that you're facing right now as people walk in the door? Is it that phishing? Is it some kind of malware people are getting in their machines? What do you see?
We're seeing some of that. It's still coming down to the base point of how do I make my system work smarter for me?
Yes.
But we are seeing an increase in malware on the Mac side. There has been a tremendous increase in the phishing. Phishing is not a platform-specific item. I mean, you're seeing that across all platforms, Windows, Macs, Linux, etc.
It's just the bad guys getting you to click the wrong thing.
Exactly. And so that's just coming through email generally. Sometimes it's coming through your web browsing. And I have to warn clients, if you want to avoid that sort of an issue, you have to turn yourself off the internet.
Wow.
It means no browsing, no email.
Wow.
Go back to pen and paper and stamps. How many of us want to do that?
Right.
So then what we try to do is consult, teach, inform clients. Here's what actions you need to be looking forward to when you're doing your internet activities, when you're reading email, which is an internet activity, when you're on the web and you're going around shopping for shoes or you know, sweaters or whatever, you are always open to some of these nefarious, you know, characters out there trying to gain your information.
So do people need to sign up for a course from you in how to do that, or
we don't do specific courses with that. We have started putting together a blog on our website to start giving little tips and tricks in that nature. A lot of our clients will come in and we'll have to clean up their system first of all. That generally can run anywhere between $44 and $88. Just depends on what we're dealing with. We start at $44 and we don't go above that without talking to you. But that generally has to first start with cleaning up the system, get the slate clean. And then we'll give you some instructions when you're coming to pick it up. Spend 15, 20 minutes with you.
Yeah.
Go over the do's and don'ts, some little tips and tricks of how to better manage your computer system on your own. And if you want, we do offer what we call classes. We do individual tutoring sessions instead of a more formal 20 people in a classroom, because I learned early on when you start to have more than a couple, two, three folks, the direction of that tutoring session, that class, can go in a myriad of different ways. And most of our customers at that point weren't satisfied with what they were getting out of the class, because Phil over here was more interested in XYZ and you were interested in ABC.
Yeah.
So now we can hone that into what you're interested in, lower the cost, $88 for a session, and keep it on task with what you're interested in.
Nice.
And I keep those generally at an hour maximum, because that's really our attention span as well.
Right.
You know, you look at schools, how
they'll
long do kids stay in a classroom?
Yeah.
55 minutes an hour. So why do a 4-hour class with 20 people to make it sound like you're gonna get something when after 35, 40 minutes your eyes are glazed over?
Yeah. Let's do this. I have so many other things I wanna talk to you about. Would you be willing to come back and talk with us again so we can just get into a little bit more Mac-specific things that everybody faces?
Certainly. Happy to.
Thanks.
Yes.
Thank you so much. And it's Greg
Kulivas.
Kulivas.
There you go.
I will have it down by next week, I promise. Greg Kulivas with Mac & More Systems. You can find Greg and all of his great staff at www.macandmoresystems.com. That's all the time we have. My name is Miriam Dady, and this is Tallahassee Business Spotlight.
Have you heard about TallyConnection.com? These are the folks who bring us all of the events and activities going on around town. It's a great little spot. TallyConnection.com. Go to that particular blog. You can find out everything you want to know about fundraisers and kids' activities and festivals and concerts. It's all there, brought to you by FSU Credit Union. And they make it possible for us to bring you Tallahassee Talks every week. So we like the fact that we're working together. We even have a link to their TallyConnection.com site on our website under community. So there's a good way to find them. TallyConnection.com. Visit this week. Find out more about what you love about this town. Events and activities, all to make your life a little bit better.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
In the world of art education, in the business of art therapy, we are fortunate here in Tallahassee to have one of those folks around who has contributed sizably in his career and continues to do so. Back for another round of conversation, Dr. David Gusak. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing good, as far as I can tell.
You've been busy. I've been watching some of your writings and, you know, reading your stuff and watching your progress, books that you've published and blogs that you're posting. Psychology Today loves you. At least the readers do.
Depends, man, who you talk to.
You're getting a lot of traffic that way. And for those of you who have not yet become acquainted with this young man.
And thank you. Can I get that in writing?
Yeah. Well, you just did. Well, you're younger than I am. Yeah, so there,
yeah,
there,
well,
you
that's,
go.
There's that.
But
yeah,
then again, everybody's,
yeah, please,
younger than I am.
Give me a benchmark here.
So for those of you who don't know, he is the chair of the Department of Art Education and professor of art therapy at Florida State University. You have... seems to me you have brought to bear the business of the scientific work you've done, the study that you're engaged in a very pragmatic way, and your writings speak to how art therapy can be applied in a lot of different settings, notably within the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. You've had opportunity there, and the title of the book that is the most recent published.
Well, the one that we talked about last time, Art on Trial.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Okay, and now you have a new book out.
Yeah, the Wiley Handbook of Art Therapy with my colleague, Dr. Marsha Rizal.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. And in that capacity, apparently there is more to be said, mm-hmm, about this business. And art therapy, we'll say, as a practice, is... a bit younger. It's a newer sort of field, huh?
Well, I mean, it depends who you speak with. I mean, if you go back to the writings of Freud and Jung, they certainly spoke about how they used art in their own work. Mm. Jung, you know, Freud would certainly encourage his clients to draw their dreams, and Jung would certainly attach meaning to the drawings that emerged from those that drew about their dreams or their archetypes that came from their symbols. It was, you know, some of our early writings in the 40s and 50s on art therapy emerged from the experiences that they had with those preeminent scholars. Mm-hmm. So the notion of art as therapy, or even the psychodynamic aspects of art, has been around since the 50s. As a professional entity, the field itself, the American Art Therapy Association, which is the field that helps define what we are here, mm-hmm, yeah, here in the States, has only been around since 1969.
Okay.
And, you know, the Florida State program has been around since the mid to late 80s, but probably in the past 18 to 20 years, it's been really kind of expanding.
Again, for those who may not be as acquainted with your work and with this particular, mm-hmm, field, how is it that art therapy contributes more so, let's say, or in a way that is different than other forms of therapy? How do you describe that for people?
Okay. Well, I mean, First off, if anyone wishes to know more about that, certainly, you know, sign up for our program. It takes about 2 years to get a firm grasp of what this is. But to put it simply...
Or as my doctor said, if you want to ask me questions, go to medical school. Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, and we'll give you a great discount. No, but the art itself becomes the tool that we use to either communicate with our clients or as a means of containing the emotion and the expression from our clients. So there's two ends of this of the same continuum. There's the art product in which you use the final art piece that a person constructs as a means of communication, as a catalyst for discussion and exploration, understanding that there are certain formal elements of the drawing and certain symbolic content of the drawing that could be used as a means of understanding the client. Yeah. To the other end of this spectrum, which is the process of art making, relying on certain characteristics of the materials as a way to explore your emotions, to be able to get to cathart, so to speak, on the page, or to sublimate your aggressive drives, or to contain what you may be feeling in a manner that is not available for words.
So in that case, we're unpeeling or unlayering this onion, right, and using art as a way of getting to the, which is, it seems to me, the object of therapy.
Certainly.
In any capacity. It's about getting down to where those conflicts may lie or what unresolved emotions may be hidden. And
absolutely.
You're saying that art is that mechanism that can open that up when someone may not be literate otherwise about it.
Well, let me give you an example from my own experience, my own work. I specialize in working with aggressive and violent clients, particularly prison inmates, juvenile justice clients, graduate students, you know, anyone who could certainly be violent. I think that was funnier in my head because I'm looking at the expression on your face going, did he mean that? No, I did. No, but I specialized for many years working in prisons. And the therapy... There are therapists in prison, and there are psychologists in prison. Mm-hmm. But the situation within a correctional institution is that it is a survival of the fittest type environment, and any expression of weakness and vulnerability is taken advantage of by other people. Oftentimes, they themselves don't know how to express what it is that they're feeling or the frustrations that they're going through, and so we allow the art to be the means of expression for them, to give an image to the words that they can't express, to be able to put a mask in place and do therapy behind that mask using our understanding of the art process and the trajectory of providing certain materials.
Describe that art process. What is it about, let's call it the psycho-emotional experience that is so beneficial to us as normal people, I suppose?
Yeah, Have you done art yourself?
I have.
Okay, so when you're engaged in the art process, have you thought that maybe 5 minutes have gone by and then you realize that maybe 3 hours have gone by?
I've had that experience.
Yeah, and because I've listened to your show, so I know.
Hey, wait a minute.
Sorry, am I off the show now?
We have to take a break, folks.
As I come back all pummeled.
It's only two hours for that matter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Seems like four.
But you understand that people can get lost in the process and that they're absorbed and they can get a sense of escape through the actual art-making process. That oftentimes people may feel that the art-making itself sublimates any aggressive tendencies because it becomes a container. It becomes a means of expression.
A cathartic sort of a thing, huh?
To an extreme because we cathart all the time, right? We punch a wall, that's catharsis. We don't want that. Yeah. But like I say in the prison, I would much rather have somebody do a drawing that exhibits a great deal of anxiety and frustration and anger than for them to pick up a chair and hit me over the head. I've experienced both, and I prefer the drawing.
When that happens, and you have that art piece then in your hand, and you're in front of your client, that interpretive part, is that the moment at which they can start talking?
Sometimes,
but not necessarily.
Yeah, you know, certainly when I had a private practice and I had one-on-one clients, I would use that piece that they used to express what they were going through at that moment as a catalyst for discussion afterwards. And certainly I never interpret the piece. I think that's a misnomer that's been propagated by outside people. Yeah. It really is a matter we can assess a piece based on certain characteristics, but it really is what the client themselves say the piece means
what
for them.
What they attribute.
Now, in a prison, I may not do that. I have a group of people or I have one-on-one with the inmates, but I would probably be a little bit hesitant for them to really express what is going on. The art itself stands as a container for what they're feeling and what they're expressing. It, by me accepting the piece from them, is enough for them to see that I accept who they are, which is so unlike what happens inside.
And that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. Well, folks, stay with me. I've got David Gusak here sharing with us some pretty interesting information about this world of art therapy and his role as department chair over there at Art Education and professor of art therapy, Florida State University. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Is it for you more enjoyable, less enjoyable? I mean, where would you rather spend your day, I suppose? Doing the craft, doing the work, or helping others do it?
Yes.
Okay. Folks, we'll be right back.
Well, and I want to be clear on something. First of all, I love teaching. Now, I have a wonderful team. We just hired a new director of the art therapy program, Barbara Parker-Bell, Dr. Parker-Bell, and Dr. Teresa Van Lith, who comes to us from Australia, came to us 3 years ago. She's our new clinical coordinator. So the three of us create a wonderful team. Now, I love being in the classroom. To be perfectly clear, I remember probably within 6-8 months ago, the dean asked me, I teach probably more classes than some, for a graduate program, I teach a lot more classes in some cases than other department chairs. And I remember the dean asked me, the previous dean asked me, well, you know, why is it that you teach so many classes? And I said, because when I'm in the classroom, you can't reach me. but the truth is, this is what I do. In 1 year, I'm stepping down as department chair. I would have been chair for 10 years. But that's because I want to be back in the classroom. I want to work with the students. We have remarkable students. They're wonderful, and they're so diverse. And I learn so much from the students that probably more so, it's purely selfish on my part. I probably learn more from them than they do from me.
Well, when you look at those advancing students,
yeah,
and you look at the science of art therapy, I know that's probably contrived on my side of the conversation here, but tell me about what you see as advancements in your understanding.
Well,
where is that happening?
Yeah, I mean, I've been part of the field for 27 years, and it's remarkable how the field itself has shaped itself, both shaped by outside forces, but also continue to shape from inside. Mm. For example, when I first started, the ultimate form of research were case studies. Now, case studies are valuable, but even the case studies that were being produced were more like narratives, anecdotal narratives. It wasn't really, it wasn't robust research, because we're clinicians and we're artists and we're out there working with people. And it's only probably been in the past 15, 20 years that the field itself has started to embrace this notion of what research could look like. Mm-hmm. Now, on one hand, we run the risk of being dictated outside on what real research looks like. So perhaps we may feel that we have to contrive to use your word, more empirical type of research, more quantitative research, more control group research, and I've done that. But there's also ways that the art education and art therapy field help shape other types of research, and now we're doing visual arts-based research in which we're relying on the art itself to be the research tool, to be the research mechanism to propel forward the advancement of our clients and our students. So there become a multitude of different types of research, and the books about research that the art therapy field can do have erupted. And you talk about the collaboration, the scientific collaboration. Well, I think we as, certainly in our program, the art therapy program at Florida State, but as a field, we contribute and interact a great deal with many other fields. Neuroscience. We interact with criminology. Personally, I work closely with the Department of Corrections, and I've for years known a number of members of the criminology program that I interact with, social work, sociology, certainly psychology, the art department, School of Medicine. Dr. Van Lith is working with a master's thesis right now whose, it's remarkable, whose thesis is grounded in medical mechanisms, measuring saliva to determine stress and seeing how the art process itself alleviates that stress over time. And it's the College of Medicine that's working with our student. And so, and Dr. Van Lith made all that happen. So we have this wonderful opportunity to work on all levels and all spectrums. We almost become a center, a catalyst for all of these interactions.
That's remarkable.
And yet we manage to hold on to our own identity. We are art therapists. I wrote a recent blog post on Psychology Today, that, and you brought that up, and I appreciate that. The blog is called Art on Trial, Confessions of a Serial Art Therapist, through Psychology Today. And oftentimes, I hear artist facilitators and artists and whatnot talk about the therapeutic value of art. And absolutely, there is certainly an inherent therapeutic value of art making, but that's different from art therapy.
Okay.
Because while there is a therapeutic benefit of exploring art on your own.
For any of us.
Right, for all of us.
Yeah.
You know,
for, that's why we doodle.
Exactly, for all of us. I don't think there's anybody that's immune to those therapeutic qualities, but the art therapists themselves are trained to take the value of those materials, to take the types of directives that can be offered to take somebody along a therapeutic trajectory.
Okay.
We manipulate.
So it's directed.
Yes, exactly.
A directed path.
Even if it's open arts studio, even if it's an open art directive, it's still structured. There's a deliberate reason why you're doing that. And, you know, to manipulate is considered a bad word. I'm sorry, like I teach my students, we manipulate all the time. We're therapists. We manipulate the materials that we offer, the environment that we put them in, the directives that we suggest, the groups that we place them in, the end result, you know, and all of this we manipulate to get to a particular trajectory. And ideally, there'll come a point where our clients can kill the therapist. They don't need us anymore.
It seems to me that manipulation in that setting is about the good of the person being manipulated, whereas the more pejorative use of the word manipulation has to do with the benefit derived by the manipulator.
Yeah, I mean, it depends
so
if you talk to.
So it's not for the therapist's good here. And I think of a chiropractor. You know, manipulation, right, is about making adjustment.
And we're constantly making adjustments. If it's something where, and it could be something very small, you know, it could be something as simple as instead of three colored pencils this week, based on the speed of the trajectory of care, we may offer six colors. And then maybe next time we'll offer oil pastels and chalk pastels, which becomes a little bit more messy and a little bit more expressive, to the point where we use very fluid materials to where they really can work outside the box and really get into the emotional quality of their expression.
And the directive aspects of that have to do with opening this person up.
Yeah.
Inviting them to make more choices, which in and of itself may be outside of what they're used to. They've been told all their lives, you can't do this.
Or on the flip side.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, or on the flip side, I have a client that is naturally all over the place and naturally is not grounded. So perhaps I'm going to use the materials to help ground them, keep them focused, keep them present, keep them in the here and now.
Interesting.
It can be.
Yeah.
could also be very boring.
Yeah. But, you know. Well, what are you going to do when you get tired of this? I mean.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the funny thing. I've been doing this, again, I've been doing this for since 104 years. I've been doing this since I used to be much taller. And I've been doing this for a very long time. And I wake up in the morning and say, you know, I can't believe they pay me to do this. Now, there are, of course, days where I wake up and say, oh, they better pay me to do this.
Boy, can I identify with that.
But yeah, but I love this. Yeah. I mean, people go into our field because of the passion that they have for the art and the passion and understanding of how it is so beneficial for their clients and the opportunity to work with a number of different people. You know, it's funny because artists, for good or ill, have a reputation of working singularly and working alone and being solely focused. Yeah. Whereas I think art therapists themselves, as much as they're artists, embrace this notion of social interaction and being able to work with others. And it's the social interaction itself that heals. The relabeling through the art process, the reconnecting with people, the re-identifying through the art in a communal group, in a communal relationship, in an opportunity to work outside of our field. We embrace that, mostly.
Yeah. Go write some more books and help some more people and teach some more students.
I'll see you next week.
Just do what you do. Just do what you do. Dr. David Gusek, our very fine guest this morning.
It's been my pleasure, believe me.
Always. Folks, you stay with me. I've got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Truck and car concept. We're your one-stop shop for tripping out to trucks. Truck and car concept. People with their cars, we're number one by far.
Hi, this is Joe Doty from Truck and Car Concepts. Want to thank Tallahassee for a wonderful and prosperous 2016. Thanks to our loyal customers and our new customers, 2016 was a very good year for Truck and Car Concepts. And look forward to 2017, serving the customers as we've always served you. Going into 17, we would also like to thank all of the military, the first responders, and our police force that gives us something that we take for granted, which is freedom, health, and safety. Without you men and women doing your job, we would not be able to enjoy the life that we lead. Let's make it a prosperous 2017. Look forward to seeing you at Truck and Car Concepts.
Truck and Car Concepts on Mahan Drive. Call 656-8800 or online at truckandcarconcepts.com.
The most talked about topics in town, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are in the second hour of this here fine radio show. Glad you've chosen to stay with us because I got Laura Green coming up. Don't want to miss this conversation. Or if you've just joined us, we had opportunity to talk to Dave Gusek in the first hour. Fantastic individual. If you missed it, don't worry. You can go to the website, tallahasseetalks.com. Listen to it there from the archived list of shows that we have for you. You can also subscribe to the podcast. It's a great idea. Then it's at your convenience whenever you want to pull it up. Pull up your little cell phone there and tap on the screen and you're in business. Love that. In fact, let me point to something else that we're doing, and this is important. The Tallahassee Food Challenge. A lot of discussion lately among those who are involved frontline, firsthand, in trying to feed the hungry in our community. This is a very tough time of year for both food charities and those who are in need. Why? Well, you know, school is out. And so school lunches and other meals are not as readily available. Easy to figure that out. And at the same time, we all tend to get a bit distracted, I think. You know, kids are out of school and vacations are being planned and carried out and such. Just got a lot going on, and so it's easy for us, or easier for us, to forget about the fact that these food charities rely on us. Now, food drives are great, and they appreciate everything that happens to help them provide food for hungry families, but let me just give you a little tip. In fact, this comes by way of Rick Miner over there at the America's Second Harvest at the Big Bend. You know, he points out that they have buying power. What does that mean? Well, a cash contribution, they can turn around and do four times what that $10 would buy for you at your local grocery store. Yeah. So $10 means $40 worth of food that they can put on the table for a hungry family. Mm-hmm. So you could do $40 worth of food out of your pocket, or you could give them $10 and let them spend the money. Because, of course, they have resource. They have the ability to get from the federal government, state governments, other charitable organizations, the food that they need to do their job. Just trying to help you out. And here's another help. If you go to the website, TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com, lots of helpful information there. You get a list of recommended items if you want to donate in addition to your cash contributions. And then again, there is a map listing out all of the various food charities that we know of, including a lot of churches that have food pantries. They're all there for you. We built the website just to make it easier for you and I to give generously on a continuing basis, and it's important. This is a critical time of year, so do that for me. And I should say, too, that the website is part of this larger campaign of just reminding us all that hunger never takes a holiday, and not every bowl is full. So that's Tallahassee Food Challenge that we are pleased to be associated with. We've got some other stories, news, and information for you. Leon County Commissioner Brian DeLoge participating in a White House meeting. Thursday, June 8th. So this was this last week. Leon County Commissioner and President of National Association of Counties, Brian DeLoge, attended a White House infrastructure event to discuss how federal dollars, I'm getting ahead of myself. How federal dollars can be strategically used in targeted ways to incentivize, I love that word, incentivize, state, local, and private sector investments. Aha. So at this particular event, DeLoge and other bipartisan state and local leaders attended a meeting with the president to discuss the administration's policies on transportation, water, and energy infrastructure systems. Okay, and then DeLoge is quoted as saying, our nation's counties own nearly half of all roadways and bridges. Wow, I didn't know that. So, he says, my time at the White House was spent discussing the critical importance of the administration's policies when it comes to ensuring the safety and proper maintenance of infrastructure to counties like Leon. Okay, well, thank you, Commissioner DeLoge, for your contributions. Seems to me well spent, time well spent there. Here's another announcement. This comes by way of Leon County. This is a notice regarding an upcoming training, CPR training for the community. Ah, this is free too, by the way. So Leon County is offering you free CPR training Saturday, June 17th. So that's next Saturday, or a Saturday from today, week from today, at the Donald L. Tucker Civic Center, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. So a couple of hours there. You, as a participant, you will receive American Heart Association CPR Anytime Kit, a CPR mannequin, a DVD, along with other educational materials. How cool is that? Carl, do you know CPR? Have you ever gone through this training? Ah, well, maybe I should do this. I mean, you know, if you were to, like, need my help at a rare moment, I'm sure, but it, you know, could happen where you're in the studio there and I need to go over there and do CPR. Well, okay, I'll think about that. But I probably should get this CPR training in any case. And if you want to do that, you can contact Major Sally Davis. Want the phone number? Here it is. 606-2100. Simple. Major Sally Davis, local area code 850-606-2100. Or you can register online at leoncountyfl.gov/press-the-chest. Clever. Okay, so that's that, CPR training. Trying to help you out here, folks. You know, never know. TCC is announcing a new scholarship program for Gadsden County students. That's nice. A unique new scholarship program for Gadsden County students. This was announced this last Thursday. The TCC Gadsden Learn Scholarship Program is a tuition assistance program sponsored by the TCC Foundation and designed to remove financial barriers to post-secondary education for graduating Gadsden County High School seniors. Carl and I were talking earlier today about the impoverished nature of Gadsden County. Curtis Richardson said this to me some time ago. He said, Brian, Gadsden County is dying. Well, that's been some time ago. I hope that it's been averted to some degree, and hopefully programs of this kind will further help us revive Gadsden County, provide for its future. It's a marvelous, marvelous community, and honestly, we don't spend enough time talking about Gadsden County, Quincy particularly. The Gadsden County Arts Center over there, Grace Robinson and Angie Bear, they did such a fantastic job. So we're trying to do a little bit more to keep us aware of the good people there in Gadsden County. I think that's about all I've got for you at the moment. We're going to continue the show. I've got Laura Green standing by here. She'll be with us through the rest of the hour. So you stay with me. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Laura H. Green is the chief scientist at the National High Magnetic Field Laboratory here in Tallahassee, and the Francis Epps Professor of Physics at Florida State University. Prior to this post, she was a Swanland and Center for Advanced Study Professor of Physics at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She also currently serves as the Associate Director of the Center for Emergent Superconductivity and the President of the American Physical Society, which has over 54,000 members. Let's welcome our guest, Laura Green. How are you, ma'am?
I'm fine. Happy to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, I hope you're happy to be here, because we're happy to have you, given, we just don't have enough time to go on reading all of your achievements and positions. Your contributions to science in general are remarkable. And there's this nifty article about you in a recent edition of Tallahassee Family Magazine. In fact, you're the cover girl.
I know.
For the magazine. So kudos to you. Add that onto your CV while you're at it.
I think I will, now that you've reminded me.
I mean, come on. You know,
I know, really.
Given the culture we're in right now, if you're not on the cover of a magazine somehow, it doesn't count, I suppose. But
I was very proud to be a part of that.
Are you? Yeah. Well, I'm glad to know that. The article itself gives us a bit of background as to some of your beginnings and your interests in science, even as a youngster. An eminent scientist, an accomplished scientist, one who has had this going on in your brain for all of your life.
All of my life, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's right.
How do you account for that? Where does that...
I can't really account for it, except that I know a lot of people like this that you just were kind of born that way. It was almost like a calling. I just wanted to do science from a very, very young age. I don't know if it was probably what draws you in the beginning is looking at stars and early space shots. You don't decide what kind of science you're going to do at an early age. You just kind of, my joke is that you get bitten by the bug of science. And you just find it, the other words I use all the time are seductive and consuming. You just can't get enough of it, and it really draws you in, and it's just really fun and really neat.
Really so, fun and really neat. And yeah. And the neat part for us is to see the outcome of all of that. Your contributions academically have...
Yeah, but science is really a collaborative endeavor. I don't want to take, you know, credit for all this stuff, because if you look at all of my papers, except when I'm doing a review or something, there's many authors, in some case many, many authors, and it's working together as a team that really makes it possible to do, right? If you, just one person working on a single science problem, question, will look at it from one direction with their background and their training, and it's very hard to crack the complexity of the science problems that we have nowadays. And so working with a team and learning how to work within a team, a diverse team, is what really helps you crack the science problems. And it's also just, like I said, fun and neat or whatever I said.
So, yeah. So the collaborative aspects of scientific endeavor then constitute better science. It's just better inquiry, right? We're not limiting ourselves. We're actually opening up to others' points of view,
yeah,
and
it's
their
just,
areas of expertise,
that.
Right?
We've seen that time and time again, is when you open up the diversity of attacking a problem, it always leads to new understanding. One of my favorite diversity points, which people probably aren't aware of this, but when the Soviet Union started to open up a little bit and American and Soviet scientists started to collaborate more, it pretty much changed the face of many aspects of theoretical physics. And it's very exciting to see. And that's not that diverse, right? It's a bunch of white males that really had different backgrounds. And now I see working with people of many different backgrounds and cultural orientations.
Yeah.
Just looking at things from a different background, and not just that I do condensed matter experimental physics, working with chemists and biologists, and just you want to even go further. In fact, one of the things that I'm coming to the conclusion is to attack the complex questions and problems of the 21st century is that we need more than just the hard sciences. We really need to involve the humanities and the arts. And that's become more and more clear to me and many of us as we go forward. We just need that, these different outlooks.
That's a provocative thought when you think about where a lot of the downbeat, at least for me, a lot of the downbeat is pointed in the other direction, where it's a matter of, you know, STEM and getting people focused in on math and science. And you're saying, hold on there, Bubba Louie. It's also about, you know, incorporating broader perspectives.
Really important.
Yeah.
Really, really important. If you just have, I mean, if you need to incorporate a new behavior, it's very difficult. My sister works at the CDC, and I've been reading something about this, you know, sending mosquito nets to people where there's, this isn't my expertise, this is something I've read, in malaria-troubled areas. Well, it's hot and humid, and they don't want to wear these thick mosquito nets. And to many of these populations, getting malaria is like you and me getting the flu. So what you need is to go in and have people decide for themselves in their own environment what's best for them. So that's just one small aspect. And if we think about whether you want to do conservation or getting along better or whatever, you need to be broadened. One of the things I've been doing for many years is science diplomacy, which is using the words and the actions of science to make a better life. And one of the aspects is water resources, right, where that's becoming difficult. But it's also just using the language to get a basis for communication.
Which is, in many respects, void of a lot of those, we'll call them partisan sort of loyalties. You talked about cultural reference, right?
Yeah.
Science is science.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can get past that. You can sit down at a table with someone from a culture or a background you have never seen before, and you talk about science funding. You talk about that in a few minutes. The kids are driving you crazy. So it actually, I found when I'm talking with people from diverse cultures and backgrounds, I find that through the words and the actions of signs, it doesn't take long to get past so many barriers that you would have if you didn't have a common language.
Fantastic. We're talking with Laura Green, our guest in this hour, who in her remarkable manner is bringing us a lot closer to this world, not only of science, but how her contributions here at the Mag Lab in Tallahassee have been extended throughout the world. You stay with me. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. That's the Merry Maid's way of keeping your home or office at its best. And it's what we have come to expect here at Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Our studios and offices always shine because Merry Maid's makes the difference, like they do for hundreds of offices and homes in Tallahassee. They'll do just the same, just for you. And they're right here, giving back to our community and giving you extra benefits, like saving you up to $400 on your first cleaning by giving you extra service, and saving an extra 10% when you mention Tallahassee Talks. Their website makes it really easy for you, too. You can schedule a cleaning and make a payment with just a few clicks, any day, any time, day or night, when it's convenient for you. Call Merry Maid's this week, 850-386-2205. That's 386-2205. Or find them online at merrymaids.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So my friend Laura and I are here talking about now the collaboration of inquiry among scientists, but is that a global thing? Finding around the world people are taking that position.
It really is. I have collaborators all over the world, and also my field is looking at really strange materials, and we've had to develop more and more complex ways of measuring these things. We do a lot of that at the Mag Lab, looking at materials under very high magnetic fields, when every time you crank up that field, you often find a whole new state of matter you've never seen before. Or just start to understand things that were not even remotely possible before. I'm always amazed at looking at, just even recently in my field of looking at solid materials that, like I said, are very, very strange. The things that carry the charges in them don't act like ways we understand. Just in the past few years, how much has been accomplished in the quality of the materials grown, the measurement capabilities. Some of the measurements that they do at the Mag Lab at High Field weren't even possible a few years ago. Never even thought about them. And they're opening up whole new areas of science. Where do they lead you? Part of it is just the gorgeousness of the science itself, that you've got a new number out of nature. The world starts getting a picture. And part of it is you never, ever know how it's going to affect our lives.
Where it is going, yeah. So, and the impact for us individually, yeah.
And that's huge. There's huge numbers of explanations, whether our cell phone materials didn't even exist 25 years ago.
Indeed.
And that's everyone's favorite. But if you look around, you've maybe heard the word quantum mechanics. Most of our economy is built on that now. And you've all heard of Albert Einstein, and he came up with these crazy theories that space is actually curved and this new LIGO and gravity wave stuff is going on. Your GPS wouldn't be worth much if he didn't do those things a little over 100 years ago.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. And so for us then, as we'll call ourselves the consumers of science or the outcome of science, either from the standpoint of being fascinated along with you for science's sake, you know, the inquiry, but also being the beneficiaries, right? We're benefiting. Dr. Bobinger was here and talked about that to some degree, referring to cell phones.
Oh, and he did too. And we do that a lot.
Well, I mean, and it's a great topic.
Okay.
Because you're carrying in your pocket something that not only did not exist, we didn't have the materials to create what that is now. And those materials have come about in the last, 10 years, maybe?
Yeah, or some of them even less. And the computing power. you know, the major universities and laboratories didn't have any of that computing power 20 years ago that we carry in our pockets.
We've talked with a number of futurists over the years here with this radio show, and one of those observations is the acceleration of the discovery. And you kind of alluded to that, where you look at this new material that prior didn't exist, and then that challenges theoretical explanation, sure. and that in turn drives you back into the process of further inquiry.
Yeah.
So no wonder you never sleep. you have no life.
It's all very exciting. It's like, whether it's an onion skin, whatever you want to say, but it seems like every time you discover something new, that leads to many, many more discoveries.
And creates another way of peeling off that layer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's not just the discovery itself, but it's the way you make right. that discovery. But science is still rooted in this sort of, I guess it was called Aristotelian logic when I was a kid, you know, this scientific method, right? Empiricism and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
So some of those fundamentals are still in place. Tell me that they are.
No, they are, absolutely. Really that is a very, very good point. And so part of what I do, I spend a lot of time in, is not just education, I love teaching, but outreach and public engagement. And when you do this kind of stuff, to try to bring your science or the science of the mag lab or what other people do, even if you're talking about gravity waves, to the public, it's getting more and more important in this changing world, not just to spout the facts. Okay? Like, this material acts this way, or the gravity wave comes from a 25 and a 35 mass black hole, 25 times the solar mass and a 35 times the solar mass hitting each other. And how do you know that?
Yeah.
What's really important to get across is this scientific method. And what I try to do more and more in my public lectures is not just say these are the answers and separate myself. I say, this is how I go to find the answers.
Get there, yeah.
And I think it's more and more important to educate the public what scientific method is, so they can look at our complex society and look at all the information coming in and do the best they can to make educated decisions based on scientific method.
Right. Wow. And for you then, as a scientist and as one who is so well connected, it seems to me, at this global level, I imagine there are conversations that you have ongoing with scientists around the world.
Yes.
All the time. And I think you talked about you're mastering the art of tweeting now, right?
I'm learning. At Laura H. Green. So, hashtag science diplomacy.
Loving the social media world.
I'm learning it.
Okay. Yeah. But that's an interesting thought, too. The influence of that level, maybe say the immediacy and convenience of communication in this, you know, this league of scientists that otherwise you would have had to, make a phone call, write a letter, I don't know.
Well, there's more and more, and there's
or
a lot of...
to meet at a conference, yeah.
You know, conferences are really important. Face-to-face discussion of science is, like,
no
really fundamental.
Yeah,
there's no substitute. Yeah. But I think the social media is great, and one of the reasons it's great is that anybody can read it anytime, and it's short. So you need to kind of learn how to filter it and get some help in that. But but I think it can reach across every level, across borders and boundaries very easily.
Well,
and
my
that's
curiosity
also
here, it gets a little bit more on the personal side. And I was joshing you when I said, well, you don't have any life. You never sleep. But I have to say...
Well, let's just say that I do think sleep is important. And I do. I mean, I think several years ago, I didn't worry about it so much. And then after having kids and stuff like that, you realize sleep is really important. You need it. And so I'm not going to give it up. Okay. When I have a chance to sleep, I take it. Having said that, I do travel around the world a lot. And I don't really care what time zone I'm in. I've sort of learned that jet lag, if you don't worry about it, you can deal with it. And if I'm working with someone in France or Korea, I do try to be there when we do our responses back and forth.
Yeah.
That is not just reading social media, but if we're actually trying to get a paper out or something.
Sure. Not to mention all the travel. Where do you head out from here?
Actually, I'm going to Aspen for a special summit on a new way to approach education and outreach for trying to combine school education with outreach and public engagement. Yeah, so some new ideas we're pursuing.
Yeah. I have to say that in keeping with the current, one of the current conversations going on around town has to do with Tallahassee finding its brand or discovering its brand. And my friend Rick Oppenheim was delighted to see that his zing was quoted in the newspaper earlier, in that he pointed at the Mag Lab, as we refer to it, as part of that brand. I think that's one of the reasons why we found your contributions to the magazine so welcome, because I think that for us, you are a bit of an ambassador. So while you carry on your career as a scientist, you are also out there, and when people ask where you live, you're in Tallahassee and you're with Florida State University and all that sort of thing.
And I do advertise it. I when I give lectures, I often say what we have available at the Mag Lab for users, and both for users and just for general public engagement, because we do have amazing public engagement things at the Mag Lab and ways people can learn, and just advertise the place because it's terrific and it's extraordinarily well respected on a global scale.
There you go. And so are you, from my understanding, highly respected. And what a nice person you are. Yes, that you're so frank about your involvements here and your willingness to kind of say, hey, you know what? I'm one of those people that live in Tallahassee. I'm sure the Chamber of Commerce appreciates it highly. So
I'm really happy to be here.
Folks, stay with me. I've got more with Laura Green. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
When you place a document in someone's hand, it should reach more than their head. It needs to reach their heart with compelling visuals and dramatic presentations right down to the paper it's printed on. Rapid Press reaches the hearts of thousands of people every day with commercial printing and mailing services for organizations that feed and house children, for businesses that bring vital products and services to our community, and for theaters, festivals, and orchestras reaching bigger audiences and bringing joy to life. Rapid Press commercial printers since 1983. For digital printing, offset printing, finishing, and mailing services when you're ready to share your vision. Excite your audience and reach the hearts of your customers. Reach for Rapid Press. Online at rapidpress.com or call 893-7346. 893-7346.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're in the final moments of Tallahassee Talks. We have Laura Green with us. When you are looking at your achievement, I mean, you just look back at all that you've done, are there moments, I suppose, in your career that are a bit more savory? I mean, that are sweeter in your mind, or is it all sort of just one long process?
Well, there's certainly moments, and I'd have to, of course, separate that, because, of course, the family stuff, the little accomplishments you have with the kids and everything like that.
Unparalleled in that respect.
Yeah, so I'm just going to leave that aside. That's a given.
That's the personal stuff, sure.
You know, there's a few times I can remember that it's quite often I'm alone in the lab when I get this, but it doesn't really become real science until you integrate it, where you're doing these measurements and you checked all the reproducibility, you've done the diagnostics, and you realize you are the only one in the world that really knows this, that really understands something brand new. And it really is kind of a rush. And a few times that's happened to me, you go to a friend, I'm going to take you out for breakfast. There's an all-night place there. I want to talk about this. And you know the hard work goes. You've got to do more details, more writing, making sure, you know, because the scientific method is so important that if you've convinced yourself that all the everything's correct, you still want to make many, many, many more checks and balances because you don't want to kid yourself.
Sure.
And that's where your colleagues come in and you ask for, you know, but this has happened to me several times and it's quite a rush. There's nothing like it.
I was going to say, and are those moments as frequent where you're really not at that moment where you can say, this is what I think I know. So you're really having to kind of bite your tongue. You're holding back on that brink of discovery, but you're sort of in that, I better not share that yet, or does that happen?
I share it.
You just go for it. Okay.
I share it. I can't tell you how many times I've rarely been scooped because my experiments are so hard, but I can't tell you how many times I said, you know, I'm going to this Gordon conference. I'm going to tell him everything I know. I may not be able to get this into even submitted for a few weeks.
Yeah.
You go for it. You know,
whatever.
And why do I want to do that is because if it's still a little raw and I have a problem and someone picks up that I have a mistake in my scientific reasoning, that's more important to me than publishing fast. So I'd rather be scooped or be late than get it wrong. That's just the bottom line. But even more is that you're building on something, right? As you, I use the word mosaic before because that's kind of the way I see it, is that I do just a little bit of thing in science. And not everything I do is breakthrough. Quite often I'm just filling a little spot in the science mosaic and what we're doing here and, you know, the world. And that's all. You don't want to have little mosaic pieces that don't belong there, that are a lie, and the whole thing could crumble. Mm. You want to work together and build on this. That's what we do. That's a platform of science.
I'm hoping that some of the younger members of our audience, especially those who are in their formative years academically, okay, people in their teens and early 20s and such, are paying attention to this, because let me ask it in the form of a question, or say this in the form of a question, that there might be a sort of contrary way of looking at achievement among those who are coming up through the ranks at this point in our history culturally, where unless you are the solo rock star in your field, you really haven't done anything. And so I find a lot of students, especially people interning, they're just kind of sitting around trying to invent the next app so that they can be the star of the show. And I'm wondering if that, first of all, I wonder why. And why do you want to do that?
Right.
But more importantly, how is that going to contribute? How are you going to make that work? And you're saying you won't very easily. You got to work together.
And it's a whole lot more fun if you're building something together that you can really, I mean, you don't want to just be first and incorrect on something that won't have the impact on your society, like general theory of relativity or transparent conductors used in cell phones, or even going back to the, you know, to the transistor. I mean, I read a lot about that history, and these guys just wanted to get it right. They just, I mean, it's a fundamental, like I told you, from a very small kid, it's a fundamental desire to try to understand the truth. And it would be no fun to just put a little bit of paint over the top and say, this is shinier paint than yours. That is no fun at all. You know, the fun is, you know, that rush you get when you think you really got something different. There's nothing to compare it, so.
And the fact that you, when you talk about some of those achievements historically, has it always been that way in science, do you think? I mean, so some of these big names, you mentioned Einstein, and, you know, we can talk about Pasteur and whoever. I mean, those are the names that are blazoned across the top. But what we're not hearing are the names of those people that they worked with.
Well,
or has that changed in our time?
Pretty much you do hear about the people. I mean, so the general public is going to hear Marie Curie and Albert Einstein.
Right.
But if you're actually doing the science, you do hear about the other people.
You're digging down.
You get the papers, you hear about it, and you see the collaborative nature. And are there people in any walk of life that would rather fool you and get famous or fool you and take your money? You know, people are people. Whether you're a dentist or an insurance salesman or a physicist or a doctor, people are people. So it's your job, it's your charge as a scientist to try to make sure that you're not making any mistakes, whether, you know, that you're not cheating or you're not fooling yourself. Right. You're not forgetting your scientific method, and through what we call a peer review process, is have a look, share your science even before it's published.
Indeed.
And that's really a joyful thing to do. It's really neat.
And you seem like a joyful person. When you're not doing science, what do you do? What do you love doing most of all? You mentioned your family, of course.
Yeah, well, the family, of course, and we're kind of dispersed around, so there's a lot of Skype and trying to visit where we can. The kids are all out of the house. You know, like I mentioned, I'm interested in science diplomacy and human rights. That's my theme this year. I mean, for fun, I don't know.
What's your favorite music? What do you like?
Oh, I have to, well, there's a couple diverse things here. But my husband's a musician, so I have to say my favorite music is Ian Hobson playing recitals, especially some of the Rachmaninoff and Debussy and Chopin is outstanding. And so, you know, check out that. But I noticed there's guitar sitting here. I used to play a lot of guitar and sing, so I like a lot of rock and roll and folk and things like that.
Yeah.
But I do, I'd say there's probably almost no, I can't think of any music I don't really like listening to.
It strikes me that a lot of folks who are the best at what they do are those people who bring to life, to their own lives, a great deal of integration, balance. You know, there are people who, I mean, you know, while they're pursuing their own interests, let's say, in terms of their career, they really love to cook, or they like to play guitar.
Yeah.
And so maybe we ought to say that if you want to be a great scientist like Laura Green, you kind of got to get it all going on.
You do. You need to do that. Absolutely.
Well, what a treat. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
With one humble request that you'll find it somehow in your schedule to come back and talk to us again.
I would love that very much. Thank you.
Well, it would be our pleasure. Folks, Laura Green, I don't have any more time to talk about how great she is, so I'm going to stop right there. We are the production of Alcom Media and Entertainment here in Tallahassee, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat. Our executive producer is Carl Cerny, and I'll be looking for you next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Trucking Car Concepts, we're your one stop shop for tricking out your truck. Trucking Car Concepts, people with their cars, we're number one by far.
Hi, this is Joe Doty from Trucking Car Concepts. Want to thank Tallahassee for a wonderful and prosperous 2016. Thanks to our loyal customers and our new customers, 2016 was a very good year for Trucking Car Concepts. And look forward to 2017, serving the customers as we've always served you. Going into 17, we would also like to thank all of the military, the first responders, and our police force that gives us something that we take for granted, which is freedom, health, and safety. Without you men and women doing your job, we would not be able to enjoy the life that we lead. Let's make it a prosperous 2017. Look forward to seeing you at Truck and Car Concepts.
Truck and Car Concepts on Mahan Drive. Call 656-8800 or online at truckandcarconcepts.com.